Let's go. Okay, we're back. We've been talking about the mind. You remember what we talked about last week? Anybody? What did we talk about? Can you actually remember? I remember something. Well, 2 weeks before, we were talking about the nature of the mind as accepting and rejecting. And last week, we were talking about the nature of the mind to be absorbed. And we talked all about becoming absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and how that's possible. So, one of the things I wanted to talk about today is a theme that Prabhupada often talks about in relation to the mind, probably something that we're more familiar with. And it's a sense of detachment from the mind. Disidentification, and as a byproduct of that, detachment. So what does that mean? It means that often Prabhupada has said that sometimes you cannot trust your mind. Sometimes you have to talk to your mind. You have to reason with your mind as if it's another entity. Sometimes you just simply have to neglect your mind. And so it means that we as individuals look at our minds as different from ourselves. We separate ourselves from the mind, and thereby we can see the workings of the mind and notice if it is not working in our interest, then we detach ourselves or we simply neglect what it says. Now, the problem is that we often identify with the mind, and that means what the mind tells us or how the mind dictates to us. We often cannot separate that from our self or self-interest. So in that consciousness, whatever the mind says, we just think that's what we are and that's what we're supposed to do and that is what is in our self-interest. And the funny thing, or the sad thing actually, is that we can continually make the same mistake over and over. And one of the symptoms of ignorance or being in Maya is the tendency to forget. So we may do something, the mind says, do this, we do it. It may not make us happy, it may even frustrate us, and then later on we forget, we do it again. So one of the obstacles that we face is the nature of the mind is that it thinks in repetitive cycles. It tends to think the same day after day after day. So even if we end up in trouble by thinking a certain way, the nature of the mind is that it will continually think that way until we do something to interfere, to reprogram it, or we create new goals or make new intentions or consciously become aware that that way of thinking is detrimental and actually focus on changing it. Otherwise, the mind, because it's part of the subtle body, is sometimes it's acting and we don't notice how it's acting. And so it just becomes a part of the way we are and who we are and the way we operate. And it's working subtly, so we're not even really observing it. It's just everything's happening. You could say it's like happening in real time and we're not observing it. So one of the ways that Srila Prabhupada recommends often in dealing with the mind is to be detached, to be an observer of the mind, to even, as we have the example, sometimes acharyas will talk to their mind, or that we say pray to the mind, prayers to the mind. And so when we look at this, then we understand what is going on as a mind is conditioned to think in a certain way, and as we, as spiritual beings who want to be devotees, have the intention of being devotees, which the mind often doesn't have. And so we're like living sometimes in a dissonance, that the mind is going one way and we want to go another way. So one of the things that happens when we become devotees is that we make a decision that this is what I want to do, based on, as Srila Prabhupada said, if you hear, then based on your understanding, you will come to a point of desiring to live a more renounced life, to voluntarily take up austerity. So we make that decision at some point. Anyone who is a devotee or anyone who's thinking about becoming a devotee are starting to make those decisions about what's better, what's right. And finally, when we become devotees, then we make a decision that this is what I want to do. I want to serve Krishna. I don't want to serve Maya. I don't want to live a life which is simply based around what I want, but I want to put Krishna in the center. I want to take myself out of the center. We make that decision. But the difficulty is when we make that decision, we're making that decision through the use of our intelligence, through the use of, through understanding the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. We're understanding the teachings of Krishna, that we're spiritual beings and this is what we're meant to do. We're eternal, we have eternal relationships, so we make that decision. But the problem is the mind doesn't automatically go along with that decision. So we, through utilizing our intelligence, make a decision, but the mind resists because the mind has a conditioned nature. So that's why we see this duality within ourselves, that although we have committed to one thing, we see how obstinate the mind is, that the mind thinks often the very opposite of the way we need to be thinking in order to achieve our goals. So that's why oftentimes it's recommended to neglect the mind. Don't take it seriously. Because the mind is the conditioned part of us, or the part that is always seeking material enjoyment. At least the conditioned mind, before we're Krishna conscious, it's habituated to thinking that way. And even though we're very determined in Krishna consciousness, especially in the beginning stages of devotional practice of sadhana, the mind just tends to continually go in the same direction, which is basically the same direction it's always been going. Direction it's been going before we were devotees. Then we become devotees, and the mind tends to continue down that same road that we were always going, although physically and intellectually we're moving in a different direction. And so that's why we understand that sometimes we just have to let the mind live out its course and let it do what it does, but at the same time not take it seriously. Just like sometimes people take themselves very seriously. And so you might have a friend that takes himself very seriously, and you might say, well, don't take yourself so seriously. You know, life's not that serious. So it's a similar thing with our mind. We tend to take it very seriously. And really what Shastra is saying is don't take your mind so seriously, because you can't always trust it, because it's working on its past programming and conditioning. Now, as you become Krishna conscious, that tends to change, but it doesn't change overnight. And at any moment, we can be influenced by the modes of nature, and therefore the mind again starts thinking like a non-devotee. Even in Bhagavad Gita, in purport, chapter 7, Prabhupada says, as long as we are conditioned souls, we're basically non-devotees, or we're basically demoniac. That's our nature. That's the default nature we have, the default programming, the sinful activities that we performed in the past have created these impressions, these scars within us. So therefore, there's that tendency to think in terms of past sinful activities, or a tendency to think of how we can be happy materially. That's a tendency of the mind. And it's just conditioned that way. It's habituated that way. And so we're constantly having to reason with it and deal with it. Now, I think there's a couple ways in which we lose in this battle. And one of the ways is that we don't make enough effort to, number one, detach ourselves from the mind, and number two, to reprogram it. And to reprogram it, you have to be detached, because you have to be able to observe your mind and what it's doing, and then say, no, I don't want it to do that. What I want it to do is this. And begin contemplating how you need to change your attitudes, your vision, purify your intelligence in a way that you can begin to recondition your mind so that you start to see things from a spiritual angle, from a spiritual position. And if we don't have a certain level of detachment, that detachment to observe the mind, then that's not going to happen. And as I was given this example, that you have prayers to the mind. Acharyas will write prayers to the mind. Mm-hmm. So this dialogue with the mind is really what we're talking about here. It's a detachment. It's looking at the mind and saying, okay, mind, I see where you're going, and I don't agree with that. So let's talk about this. Let's reprogram according to where I want to go. So this is what I want to do. Just like you have that song by Govinda Das. Bhajahure mana. So my dear mind, just worship Sri Nanda Nandana. So he is talking, Govinda Das is talking to his mind. He said, okay, so he's like laying it out. He said, this is what I want to do. I want you to worship Govinda. Then he starts reasoning with his mind. He said, you know, material pleasure is like, it's just like a drop on a lotus flower, and it's just here today, gone tomorrow. It's temporary. So he's using his intelligence, and he's speaking to his mind and saying, mind, come on board with what I want to do. So there's this detachment, and in the process, he's talking to his mind and saying, these are my goals. And I want you to understand why these are my goals, because this is the nature of material life. And material life causes misery, and I don't want to experience that misery. So I want you to cooperate with what I want. Of course, we have to be very clear about what we want, and have to be very intentional about what we want. And then we can begin to reprogram the mind and say, okay, mind, this is what I want. Now, this is how you have to start thinking in order that I can achieve what I want. Now, if we don't do that, and even if we do, we get caught off guard very easily, and then the conditioned mind goes back and starts revolving, cycling the way it normally thinks. So then we have to again say, no, mind, that's not the way I want to think. That's not the direction I want to go. And begin talking to it again and reasoning with it, reprogramming it to think according to principles of Krishna consciousness. No, you should think this way. Because if you think this way, that will help me get closer to Krishna. So it's sometimes difficult to detach oneself and just be the observer, because the mind, as Arjuna said, the mind's very impetuous. That means when it's like a child sometimes, they want something and you're holding their hand, they'll just pull you. Say, I want this, and they'll pull you to it. They'll say, get that for me, or they'll start crying or having a tantrum if they don't get it. Now, the mind sometimes is like that. So Arjuna said it's strong and it's impetuous. So sometimes the mind wants something, it goes into action. There's no, we don't interfere with that. It just happens. So if that's the case, it's very difficult to live a Krishna conscious life, because we have to be in a position where when that happens, we have enough detachment that we can observe it. Say, okay, I'm watching what the mind is doing. There's a nice prayer in which a devotee is watching his mind, and he's seeing that his mind is full of contamination. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, where does lust sit? He said, it sits in the senses, it sits in the mind, it sits in the intelligence. So lust is there. We can see that often the mind is full of lust, or the senses, even the intelligence. So this devotee is observing that, or so many other contaminations. He's observing within his mind. And he's saying, or he's praying to Krishna, he said, that even if these material desires remain within me, I will go on executing devotional service. That's very interesting. So he's acknowledging the contamination. He's acknowledging the anger, he's acknowledging the envy, he's acknowledging the material desire. He's acknowledging all the bad things within him that sometimes surface. At the same time, he's saying, but that's not going to deter me from my service to you, Krishna. So it's a very, very powerful meditation, it's a very powerful prayer, that even though the mind may be directing us away from Krishna, our intention is to serve Krishna so that we can come to a position where that intention is so clear within us that even though the mind is somewhere else, we can continue going on towards our goal. And so the mind really has no effect. at least in the sense of taking us away from Krishna. It has an effect. It's disturbing to think of other thoughts while we're engaged in devotional service. But that sense of determination, that sense of detachment from the dictations of the mind, enables, empowers the devotee to remain fixed in his determination. Now, it's such an important point, because oftentimes we get in situations in which the mind becomes overpowering, and we may do something which is not in our spiritual self-interest, and then we may look back and reason that, well, I was overpowered, and perhaps even make the excuse that we were helpless, or felt helpless, or we really couldn't do anything about it. So we want to get over that concept that we can't do anything about it. And we want to understand that we always, no matter how difficult it is, we always have a choice to act in Krishna consciousness or to give in to the effects of the mind or the modes of nature. It's not that we're helpless. It's not that we can't do anything. And when we surrender to the idea that we can't do anything, then at that point we're in big trouble, because then we go along with it and say, well, that's just who I am, or that's how my mind works. And it's very easy to convince ourselves that that's true. But what did Prabhupada say again and again? He said the mind can be an enemy, and if that is true, why would we want to listen to an enemy? And Prabhupada is saying, therefore, sometimes you have to neglect the mind. So he's saying that's a choice. It's not that you have to do it. Why did you do that? Well, I didn't have any control. No, you can't say that. You can say I didn't exert control, but you can't say I don't have control. Now, for example, we sometimes mention in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, he talks a lot about how to deal with the mind. And he talks a lot about that because the mind is, as Prabhupada often says, is the central point of the practice of yoga, is to fix the mind, control the mind. And as devotees, that means for us to fix the mind on Krishna. So if the mind is not fixed on Krishna, if it's fixed on something material that pulls us away from Krishna, that defeats the purpose. So Patanjali deals a lot with how to control the mind. And as we've often said, he has recommended that if the mind is thinking of something which is not in line with your spiritual pursuits, your goals, your intentions, he said that you can, at that point, recognize what you're thinking and change those thoughts. And he recommends thinking in the opposite way. So, for example, let's say you are resentful of someone, or you even despise someone, then the opposite way of thinking would be to think how I can serve them, how I can help them, how I could become their well-wisher. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I should do the greatest good to my worst enemies. I should desire only the greatest good for my worst enemies. So that's an example. Here's an enemy. And now, when there's an enemy, how do you feel towards an enemy? How do you think towards an enemy? You tend to think of how you would like them to suffer in some way, or how you'd like to get back at them, or how you'd like something bad to happen to them. So here Patanjali is saying, well, just change that and become their well-wisher. So the point he's making is that, yes, you do have control of your mind. You can alter its patterns. You can reprogram it. And so it starts thinking in more favorable ways. And we have this principle, anukulyena. Anukulyena means favorable, serving Krishna favorably. So Kongsa is an example of someone who was thinking of Krishna, but not thinking favorably. He was thinking how to kill Krishna. So we want to think of Krishna favorably, or we want to serve Krishna favorably. So often the mind is thinking unfavorably, but we always have that option. We have to, at least we should remember, we always have the choice to think of Krishna. or we always have the choice to think of it in a Krishna conscious way, or at least the choice to do what? To neglect, to not listen to the mind. At least we have that much choice. And you will see that if you become more aware of how the mind is working, if you become more observant, then you will become better at reprogramming the mind to become the servant of your desire, or at least being able better to neglect it. And whatever it's thinking, it doesn't matter. You don't have to act on it. That's the point. And that's the teachings of Krishna consciousness. That's why we take vows to follow regulative principles, because we're making a commitment that even though the desire is there, I don't have to act on it. Of course, Prabhupada has said that just trying to negate something material will not work, because you need to be engaged in devotional service, because it will give you a taste. So ultimately, that's, of course, the solution, and we talked about that last week. But often, in order to be properly engaged, we have to learn that art of subduing the mind, neglecting it, reprogramming it, talking to it, being detached, observing it, redirecting it in the right way, and it can be done. It's not that difficult, but it requires practice. Like in Krishna consciousness, everything in the beginning is about practice. And one of the problems we run into is if we stop the practice, then that conditioned nature overtakes us. So it's a constant practice of observing the mind, not acting according to its dictates, which often is very difficult. Sometimes we can only do that after we act according to its dictates, like we become upset, we get angry, we say the wrong thing. We become overcome. It's like we had no control over it. But at least then we can look and see what happened and say, okay, now how can I prevent that from happening in the future? Why am I acting this way? What's going on here? So we recognize, oh, maybe I have a problem with anger. Maybe I have a problem with fault finding. Maybe that's just the way the patterns of my mind work. We can do something about it. If we want to be Krishna conscious, certainly we must. So now let me look at if you're saying anything. Okay. So Bhakti Carol is here. Adi is here. Anushka Patel is here. And others are here who haven't logged in yet, who are watching us. So this... this idea of we have a choice of how we react to the mind's dictates, it seems obvious, it seems simple enough, but one of the functions of Maya is to cover us. And so when we're covered, we often don't think we have a choice, and we're just acting according to the dictations. And it's often only when we become frustrated or regret what we've done that we get control of our mind. But the point is, we can get control of the mind long before that. And that's why it's so meaningful and interesting that in the Gita, Krishna says, sometimes the mind is the enemy. The enemy. What is the enemy? The enemy lives within. That's scary when you think about it. The mind is the enemy, which means the mind can drag us away from Krishna's lotus feet very easily. Happens all the time. Happens to advanced devotees. Sometimes they forget Krishna. Sometimes they forget everything about Krishna. And they're simply acting according to the dictates of the mind. So, the ability to be able to choose to neglect an enemy's dictation is essential for spiritual advancement. It's essentially important. So, does anyone have any questions? Oh, yes. So, Bhakti and Carol is saying, well, what about emotions? You have thinking, you have feeling, and you have willing. So, connected with thoughts, often thoughts have no feeling. They're not reacting on an emotional level. And that's why it's easier to change thoughts, because emotions means you're experiencing something. You're experiencing the effect of the thought. You may feel or think, you may think you don't like somebody, but you may not feel anything. You may not feel, I don't like that person, but you don't feel aggressive towards them. It doesn't make you feel angry. You don't feel like being hurtful. You may not even feel upset. But feelings are dictating to us a little more. They're talking to us a little more about what's going on inside of us. And so feelings are often not Krishna conscious, and therefore we often try to forget about them or bury them or avoid them. But feelings are often speaking to us. And if I'm feeling the wrong thing, that obviously will make me feel uncomfortable. And that uncomfortable feeling can be teaching us that, yes, this is when you think in a certain way, it may produce a certain feeling, which is not Krishna conscious, and the result is it makes you upset or disturbed, or in some way it is not helping you, or some way it's hurting you. And if you feel that feeling deeply enough and you feel how much it is hurting you, that feeling can be the impetus to change. Whereas if you just bury it, it doesn't go away. It will act out in some way and you won't resolve the issue, because you can only resolve it by dealing with it. So let's say you really do feel hatred towards some other devotee and you know that's wrong. And so you try to ignore or bury that feeling. But what if you confronted it? Say, you talk to yourself and you say, look at Bhakti and Carol. Look at how you feel towards this other devotee. The way you feel is the way non-devotees feel. You're not exemplifying the behavior of a Vaishnava. How does a Vaishnava feel towards someone who has done something to hurt them or harm them? He's their well-wisher. So I should feel love. I should feel compassion. So by acknowledging your feelings, you can begin to process them and perhaps turn them around, or at least resolve some problem you're having. But thinking doesn't necessarily mean that there's any emotion involved. You know, you may be thinking about so many things. Doesn't mean there's going to be a will to do it or a feeling to do it attached to it. So, okay. Does anyone else have any other questions? I brought some things we can read. We can't read them. I will read them and you will hear them. So I just want to wait a minute to see if anyone has any questions before we go on. I brought some things to read. Thoughts I've gathered from various sources about the nature of the mind and how to deal with it. Okay. All right, Adi. Everybody's happy out there. So let's look and see what we can find. Patanjali has given a definition of yoga, and this is his definition. Patanjali defined yoga as the control of thoughts in the mind. He defined yoga. In the book, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, he defined yoga as the control of thoughts in the mind. So I like this word, control. We say, control yourself. Often we say, control your mind. So it's making that point, again, that we do have the power to control our mind. If we don't utilize that power, then the modes of nature will control it. And that's why sometimes we think, well, the mind's so difficult to control, because we're allowing the modes of nature to control it, and at that point it often seems impossible to control. So sometimes your mother or your father will ask you, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? And you can't decide. And you just say, I don't know, I can't decide. And so they might say, well, if you don't decide, I will decide for you. So the mind is like that. It said, if we don't control it, then the modes of nature will control it. Or they'll say, make up your mind, or I'll make it up for you. You want to do this, you want to do that. I don't know, I'm not sure. Well, make up your mind, otherwise I'll make it up for you. So that's our position. We have to make up our mind, or our mind will be made up for us. And when our mind is made up for us, then there's this duality in our life. There's this dissidence between what we know is right and what's happening, because when our mind is made up for us, it's made up for us by the influence of the modes of nature. And so we're not living a life which is integrated with what are our ultimate goals. We're living a life that's segregated. It's a life of duality, where our heart is in one place, but our mind is in another place. And that's a very painful life. So if we learn to be unified between heart and mind, we become very happy, because then we're a whole person. We're an integrated person. But if our mind is always having the better of us, then we're a segregated person, and then we're always fighting with ourselves in a certain way or a certain sense on a certain level. And then it's a great form of misery. It's a great torture, actually. I don't know who said this, but the following quote follows what we're saying. Ill thoughts usually hurt ourselves much more than who they are directed towards. We have to live with the envy, resentment, jealousy, anger, etc. I think I said that. So I'm reading my own quotes. I think only famous people can do that, so I don't know if this is bona fide. So it's the nature of the way Krishna created this world that when we have ill thoughts or the wrong thoughts, it causes us pain on some level. Now, sometimes we may try to avoid that. Avoid it. By avoid, I mean not acknowledge it. But that's why it's important to acknowledge these things, because if ill thoughts are causing us pain, it's better to acknowledge the pain, because the pain will be a motivator to change the way we're thinking. I mean, so many times, if we're thinking of material enjoyment in some way, if we're thinking simply about enjoying my mind or my body, and it has no relation to Krishna, for a devotee or for anyone practicing spiritual life, those thoughts are painful. But they come in the form of enjoyment, that we're getting some enjoyment from it. So it's a real paradox that we're getting some enjoyment from something that's painful. And it's the enjoyment that allures us to those thoughts. But the byproduct or the result of those thoughts is pain. That any time we contemplate how to enjoy separately from Krishna, even though there may be pleasure in those thoughts, it's accompanied with pain on a certain level, especially for devotees. Because we know that's wrong. So we're enjoying something on a sensual level by looking at it or hearing it, tasting it, whatever it may be, touching it. But on another level, it's causing pain because it's not congruent with our spiritual purposes. So ill thoughts, we have to carry them around. We suffer the consequence of them. It's an instant karmic reaction. And any kind of pure thought awards us a higher taste, pure consciousness. It's easy to think the wrong thing because that's the way the mind goes. We find this when we're chanting. It's very easy to chant without controlling the mind. Just chant and let your mind wander. It doesn't take much effort. It's not difficult. But when you try to control your mind, it takes a lot of effort. It's difficult. Sometimes it can even be painful. So sometimes we just would rather avoid the pain of controlling the mind and let the mind just go off and try to enjoy the material world. But then we have to experience the pain of disconnecting from Krishna, at least disconnecting for that period of time. And then, as I was saying, there's this habitual thinking. So the more we think in terms of sense gratification, of putting ourselves in the center, how we can enjoy, the more we think that way, the more it creates a tendency to think that way. Of course, the tendency is already there. So we're only really reinforcing it more and more and more. So Krishna consciousness means to break that habitual thinking and to see how Krishna should be in the center, not me, and how I can use everything for his enjoyment. So that's a reprogramming of our mind, of our subconscious, conscious everything. It's a total reprogramming. So the more we are aware of or connected with the reality that any thoughts which are not Krishna conscious are painful on some level, the more we accept that, the more we allow ourselves to experience it, the more we're conscious of it, the more easily it will be to control our mind, because then we're more conscious of the negative consequences of allowing our minds to become distracted by material sense gratification. Even when we're chanting it, our minds may not be distracted by sense gratification, but they may be distracted by other things. And so the pain or the effort involved in controlling the mind always pays off. It's always worthwhile. And the more we think of Krishna, the more we get a taste for it, and the more we reprogram our minds to think that way. A lot of devotees have said that in chanting japa, it's always been a challenge for them to control their mind, but they say that if they continually work on it, they said at a certain point, what happens is the mind just calms down and it doesn't distract them. And the mind is like just like an observer to the chanting and just listening. So it's a reconditioning of the mind. Wouldn't that be wonderful? As soon as you begin chanting, your mind just automatically just calms down and listens to your chant. But it's possible, like Krishna says, abhyasa. Abhyasa means practice. It's possible by constant endeavor. So you know, that's the reality of sadhana. It's a constant. It's not just once in a while in the day we control our mind, but it's constantly. Because the allurements of the material world are all around us, all the time. And so we're constantly trying to absorb our mind in Krishna consciousness. And that was how Prabhupada wanted us to be, always engaged, always thinking of Krishna, always serving Krishna some way. Just really dousing ourselves with nectar. That was really his program. Just these drops of nectar coming through devotional service or coming through our ears, hearing about Krishna, coming from our tongues, talking, chanting, speaking to others about Krishna, just absorbed in this way and thereby getting a taste which allures us to this higher position. So there's this impetus, natural impetus to control the mind and senses when there's a taste. Because that's what you get by doing it. You get rewarded. So, you know, if you really look at it, you stand back and look at it, you see the rewards are extremely great for controlling the mind. And the pain of not controlling the mind is very severe. Because then you're a conflicted person. Your mind is in one place, but your life is apparently going in another place, or your body's going in another place, or apparently your body is serving Krishna, but your mind is somewhere else. And so in Prabhupada's instructions, and even in Gita, man mana, it's not just the body that Krishna's talking about, but more it's the mind, and even beyond that, it's the heart. You know, the most confidential instruction of the Gita is man mana, bhava mad bhakto. Think of me, become my devotee. That's really the essence. Giving the mind, giving the body is easier than giving the mind, because you can give your body, but you can hold on to your independence, at least in your thinking. You can hold on to your material enjoyment within your mind. So giving your mind to Krishna is even higher than giving your body. And of course, the highest is you give your entire being, your heart, your body, mind, and heart, everything. And that's really what Krishna wants. So, man mana bhava mad bhakto. Krishna doesn't just say, give me your body. Actually, in this verse, you could say, namaskuru, he's saying, offer obeisances to me. You know. So really, he's saying, give everything. But the mind is a real thing. The heart is a real thing. And so it's a devotional service, it's an important devotional service to give the heart to Krishna. Because that's something that we tend to want to hold on to. You know, we can give the body more easily, but to give the heart fully is often difficult. Often devotees talk about their unwillingness to surrender, unwillingness to give everything to Krishna. But when one advances in bhakti, it's just the opposite. There's an intense willingness to give everything to Krishna, an intense desire. But how do we get there? We have to work our way, wade our way through these waters of practice, of intense practice, of controlling the mind. And then the sweet taste of thinking of Krishna starts growing on us, and it becomes easier, becomes more natural to think of Krishna, to give the heart. You want to give the heart. You don't want to hold on to it for yourself. That's what love's all about. Love means you're giving your heart to someone else. You don't, you know, why do people want to love? Because even though people are self-centered, they still have this strong need to serve others, to give to others, to give their hearts, to give their lives. Men sacrifice their lives for their countries. They sacrifice their lives for their families. Women sacrifice their lives for their children. It's a natural desire. So down in the core of our heart, there's this spontaneous desire to just want to give the heart to Krishna without any hesitation, without any consideration. So wouldn't that be nice? We just automatically, our mind and hearts were flowing to Krishna like the Ganges flows to the ocean. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. So as we practice controlling the mind, then it becomes easier because we're reconditioning the mind, but also because our bhakti is becoming stronger by that process. And as the bhakti becomes stronger, naturally we become more detached. And naturally it becomes easier to think of Krishna. And then we come to this platform of the essence of the Gita's instructions. Man mana bhava mad bhakto. Think of me, become my devotee. And become my devotee means give your heart to me. And then we have, you know, the famous verse, patra pushpam palam toyam. Krishna is saying, it's not the leaf or the fruit or the flower you're offering, but it's the mood that you're offering with. As in any gift, it's really, ultimately, it's about the affection of the giver. And so Krishna thrives on affection. And if we remember that, of course we know that, we hear that all the time. You can offer me a fruit, leaf, flower, water, but offer with bhakti. So we hear that Krishna thrives on bhakti. But to remember that, so powerful. To remember that in your japa, to remember that in your service, that it's not about the service, it's about the bhakti. It's about becoming pure. It's not about being recognized. It's about being pure. It's about giving the heart. It's about being a pure devotee. If we always have this meditation, it's a really nice meditation that I've been doing lately, and in doing devotional service, there's so many contaminations that can come up in the heart. But my meditation has been lately that the goal of bhakti, the goal that Srila Prabhupada wanted for us, is to be a pure devotee. That's what he wants. That's what we're here for. And so if you always remember, I'm here to be a pure devotee, then when you're traveling through this world, it's much easier not to get caught up or hung up in all the possible distractions or the possible gross and subtle ways of that you can enjoy this world. You just think, no, I don't. That's not what a pure devotee is all about. I'm just trying to be a pure devotee. That's what bhakti is about. I'm trying to be a pure devotee, and therefore a pure devotee doesn't think this way or that way. Remember what the goal is. Remember what Krishna wants from us. What Krishna wants from you and me. If you remember that, then you'll remember, yes, he wants me to be pure. That's what it's all about. It's not about accumulating sense gratification. It's not about position. It's not about fame. It's not about what I want. It's about being a pure devotee. And then, if we're pure devotees, then we have no worries, we have no anxieties. We have full faith in Krishna. We have full faith in Krishna's protection. Everything is, that's everything. That's what it's all about. So, in my experience, my personal experience is that the more we're connected with that desire, the more gradually the mind will come along. The more intent we are, the more we are focused on pure devotional service, that's what it's all about. Giving my heart to Krishna, that's what it's all about. The mind will naturally begin to support us more easily. I found this in japa also. If you listen to anything I've spoken on japa, you may remember that I have my realization about controlling the mind is that if you give your heart to your chanting in prayer, then you don't have to worry about controlling your mind. Because you've already, once you give your heart, your mind's there with your heart, really, ultimately. So if you're chanting, you're praying, Krishna, please uplift me, please bless me, please bring me closer to you, please bring my heart to you, please enter my heart, please make me qualified to serve you, please help me understand you, please help me become a better servant of my guru. If all these prayers are there, then where do you think your mind is going to be? It's right there also. So bhakti is about giving the heart and giving the heart freely and giving the heart knowing and with full faith that Krishna, if I do this, this is the highest perfection. I need not worry, Masucha, about anything else. And then when we're in that consciousness, when we're in that world, we'll find the mind naturally will be much more supportive of our bhakti. And the reason I think our minds are not supportive is because we're still, as long as we're still toying with the material world, we're still thinking there's something out there, the mind's naturally going to hover like a radar and check it out. Whereas if we really want to give our hearts to Krishna, if pure devotional service is really what we're always fixed on, then the tendency will be for the mind to follow suit. So when we see our mind working in a conditioned way, we should be thinking, it's doing this because I still have some hope on some level or some desire on some level or some feeling or sense or realization, whatever it may be, that I can be happy without Krishna consciousness. Or at least I can be happy with this one thing that's not Krishna consciousness. Or this one thing that's not Krishna conscious, give me pleasure. So naturally the mind is going to go there. So wherever you see your mind going is also an indication of what's going on in your heart. Even though the mind is conditioned, still, if we work on it and change our consciousness, we'll condition it to support our desires. So let me go and see what you're talking about. Okay. Can you relate what you were saying now to a situation when another person is cruel to us? What is the pain from them? It's still our own thoughts we hear even then. Well, there's not an easy answer to this, but I think the principle of that we need to understand is that there's always a right way of reacting in any situation and a wrong way. And so Krishna consciousness teaches us how to react or how to act. And those ways of acting are not always what we would consider normal by standards of this world. Like when I teach forgiveness, I say, my realization has been that forgiveness, materially, it doesn't seem like the right thing to do. It's because when you've been mistreated, it's not normal to not want to, in some way, react to what has happened to you, react negatively. And so, you know, materially, if we've been hurt by someone, it doesn't make sense not to react, to react with kindness or to react with self-control. It's not really logical. Being kind to someone who's hurt you is not really logical. And so that's why we often, become upset. But then Krishna consciousness gives us a way of responding or a way of proactively acting based on spiritual principles. And those principles are not always going to be logical. As we said, Bhaktisiddhanta said, you should wish the greatest good for your worst enemy. That doesn't make sense. Of course, it makes sense spiritually. So we're learning to act spiritually. We're learning to do the right thing. And that requires practice. First, it requires learning what the right thing is. Then it requires practice. And often we don't do the right thing. And I think a lot of times we don't do the right thing and we don't even think about it. We just think, well, that was the only thing that should have been done. But it's the wrong thing. Because we retaliated against someone and we shouldn't have. Or we became angry at someone and we shouldn't have. There's no reason to be angry. Did that answer your question? What is the pain? You're asking, what is the pain from? The pain's from our own thoughts. Say, well, ultimately the pain is from how we react, and our reaction is based on our thoughts. I mean, if somebody hurts you, you could think, for example, that this person is in pain themselves, and that's why they're hurting me. So it's possible you could feel compassionate, which is, of course, a higher way of thinking than thinking of ways to retaliate or just being upset or angry or thinking cruel thoughts. So I'm not saying that situations won't provoke you to think in those ways, but what I am saying is that you don't necessarily have to think that way. And as devotees, we should be practicing to think in not reactive ways that are influenced by the modes of nature or influenced by our past conditioning. And of course it's difficult. We're humans. We react in strange ways. We don't always act reasonably. We don't always act in Krishna consciousness. But whatever the case may be, those thoughts which we possess may cause us great distress if they're not Krishna conscious. Okay, she goes on to explain. I mean, too, the pain one can feel when someone is mean, just that it hurts and you cry. I imagine it's based on things like pride and idea that things belong to me. It can be based on many things. It also could be based on what you expected from that person. You expected the person to know better, to do better. But you see that it's your expectation that's causing you the pain. Maybe if you didn't expect the person to act that way, it wouldn't hurt you. Sometimes I know situations hurt me because I see how certain people's actions hurts the movement. Or I feel that what they've done is upsetting to Prabhupada, so it naturally hurts me. But still, there are other ways of thinking about it. There's other ways of seeing it that would not necessarily hurt me. Of course, sometimes those feelings can be transcendental, that you may be hurt, and it may be because of your attachment to serving Prabhupada. And you see something that you feel is upsetting him. So that's different. Because then now the cause of the upset is not your thinking in the mode of ignorance or passion, but it's your bhakti. So one time someone said to Prabhupada, oh, you know, there's so much anxiety in devotional service, or an anxiety in this world. And Prabhupada said, there's anxiety in devotional service, and there's anxiety in the material world. So you're going to have to be in anxiety about something. So might as well be spiritually anxious. So sometimes even on the spiritual plane, they'll be upset. But then Krishna becomes the center, or the Guru becomes the center. Service becomes the center. Service to Guru and Krishna. That's what I was trying to say. Okay. So, you know, we're talking about expectations. We expect devotees to act in a certain way. Sometimes they don't always act that way. There was one writer, I don't know his name, he said that, you know, often when you see people acting improperly, you can adopt a compassionate attitude and think that the person is also struggling in their life, and they're undergoing many of the difficulties that we all go through. Perhaps they're going through even more difficulties than we're going through. So if you think that way, when, let's say, someone lashes out against you, you could think there's probably a lot more going on in their life than what I just did to them or what I just said. Now you could actually feel compassionate, and there wouldn't be any hostility within you, or you wouldn't be upset. So the same misbehavior, the same misconduct, the same nasty remarks were made to you, but you take them differently. We have a story I told recently of a man who was criticizing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would say, "This man is my friend. He's correcting me." So most people wouldn't take it that way. They would be upset. Somebody's criticizing me. Or their ego would be really deflated by such criticism. And here's Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saying, "Oh, he's my best friend. Because he's criticizing me, he's keeping me humble." So it's all a question of how we process things. Okay. So when someone is mean, do we think that Krishna arranged that treatment? Yeah, it's one possible way. You can think Krishna wants me to learn how to be kind to those who are mean to me. You could think it's the nature of the world that everyone's not going to be nice to me. You could think, probably I deserve this. Perhaps I was mean to that person also in my past. There are many ways you can process it, and that's where Shastra comes in, because Shastra teaches us how to process how we should think in various situations. Shastra teaches us when we suffer, we think, actually, I'm so sinful, I deserve worse. But Krishna is so kind that he's removed the suffering. That is a way which most people would not think. People tend to blame God. They don't think they deserve more suffering. So Dhammavipra went on the request of his wife to ask Krishna for some charity. And he never asked, and Krishna didn't give. And when he left, he thought, you know, it's a good thing Krishna didn't give it, because I probably would become proud. Or in some way, I would lose my spiritual position. That's how he was thinking. Now, you may pray to Krishna to give you something, he doesn't give it to you. You may become angry at Krishna. So Dhammavipra was thinking, oh, it's very good Krishna didn't give me anything. And so Dhammavipra was very poor, hardly had clothes and food. So he really did have an excuse to pray, to ask Krishna for help. But just see how he was thinking. So through the examples of the sadhus and through the stories of Bhagavatam, we see how devotees think, and therefore we can learn in how to act, how to think in the situations that we encounter based on how they're thinking. That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. Otherwise, we can just, you know, we can continually go on with our conditioned mind, reacting and being critical and bitching and arguing and thinking we're better and criticizing others and faulting others and being obnoxious, or however it is we are or we were before we were devotees, and just allow that nature just to continue without even noticing it, observing it, doing anything about it. We can do that. And we can do that year after year. We can do it for lifetimes. But really, Krishna consciousness is meant to step back from that and look at that and say, I can do better than this. I can take control here of my thoughts. At least I can control them enough to not act upon them. If I can't control them, I can neglect them. So that's the process. So I want to end here so everyone can go home. Well, you are already home, but we're not already home, so we can go home. So thank you. And next week, I have been asked to do a, what do we call this? Next week, there's a devotee that does, I don't know if he calls it a Prabhupada night, but he invites disciples of Prabhupada to his home, and each week, one of the disciples speaks about Srila Prabhupada. So next week, we're just going to take our program there, and we're going to speak about that. And the program actually starts at 7, but that's, these devotees are from Latin America, so I don't know what 7 o'clock means, Latin America time. And there may be prasadam at 7, there may be kirtan, but definitely by 8 o'clock we'll be on. If you want to check earlier, that's fine. You can see what's going on. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. We'll see you next week.